smritya makunda charitagriya siduna. Yamaira kamair niyamais chapyanindaya. Narihaya dvandva titikshaya cha. Ahinsaya paramahansya charyaya. Smitya makunda charitagriya siduna. Yamaira kamair niyamais chapyanindaya. Nirihaya dvandva titikshaya cha. Ahinsaya paramahansya charyaya. Smitya makunda charitagriya siduna. Yamaira kamair niyamais chapyanindaya. Narihaya dvandva titikshaya cha. Vaishnavis. Ahimsaya, by non-violence. Paramahamsya, charyaya, by following in the footsteps of great acharyas. Smitya, by remembering. Mukunda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Acharita agriya, simply preaching his activities. Siduna, by the nectar. Yamai, by following regular principles. Akamai, without material desires. Niyamai, by strictly following the rules and regulations. Cha, also. Api, certainly. Anindaya, without blasphemy. Narihaya, living simply, plain living. Dvandva, duality. Tatikshaya. By tolerance. Cha. And. Translation. A candidate for spiritual advancement must be nonviolent, must follow in the footsteps of great acharyas, must always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, must follow the regular principles without material desire, and while following the regular principles, should not blaspheme others. A devotee should lead a very simple life and not be disturbed by the duality of opposing elements. He should learn to tolerate them. Purport. The devotees are actually saintly persons, or sadhus. The first qualification of a sadhu, or devotee, is ahimsa, or nonviolence. Persons interested in the path of devotional service, or in going back home, back to Godhead, must practice ahimsa, or nonviolence. A sadhu is described as titikshava karunika. A devotee should be tolerant and should be very much compassionate toward others. For example, if he suffers personal injury, he should tolerate it. But if someone else suffers injury, the devotee need not tolerate it. The whole world is full of violence, and a devotee's first business is to stop this violence, including the unnecessary slaughter of animals. A devotee is the friend not only of human society, but of all living entities, for he sees all living entities as the sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does not claim himself to be the only son of God and allow all others to be killed, thinking they have no soul. This kind of philosophy is never advocated by a pure devotee of the Lord. Suhridat sarvadehinam. A true devotee is the friend of all living entities. Krishna claims in Bhagavad Gita to be the father of all species of living entities. Consequently, the devotee of Krishna is always a friend of all. This is called ahimsa. Such nonviolence can be practiced only when we follow in the footsteps of great acharyas. Therefore, according to our Vaishnava philosophy, we have to follow the great acharyas of the four sampradayas or disciplic successions. Trying to advance in spiritual life outside the disciplic succession is simply ludicrous. It is said, therefore, acharyavan purusho veda. One who follows the disciplic succession of acharyas knows things as they are. Tadvigyanartam sagurum eva bhigacchet. In order to understand the transcendental science, one must approach the bona fide spiritual master. The word smritya is very important in spiritual life. Smritya means remembering Krishna always. Life should be molded in such a way that one cannot remain alone without thinking of Krishna. We should live in Krishna so that while eating, sleeping, walking, and working, we remain only in Krishna. Our Krishna Consciousness Society recommends that we arrange our living so that we can remember Krishna. In our ISKCON society, the devotees, while engaged in making spiritual sky incense, are also hearing about the glories of Krishna or his devotees. The Shastra recommends, Smartavya Satatang Vishnu. Lord Vishnu should always be remembered, constantly. Vismartavyo Najatu Chit. Vishnu should never be forgotten. That is the spiritual way of life, smritya. This remembrance of the Lord can be continued if we hear about him constantly. It is therefore recommended in this verse, Mukunda Charitagriya Siduna. Sidhu means nectar. To hear about Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or similar authentic literature is to live in Krishna consciousness. Such concentration in Krishna consciousness can be achieved by persons who are strictly following the rules and regular principles. We have recommended in our Krishna conscious movement that a devotee chant 16 rounds on beads daily and follow the regular principles. That will help the devotee to be fixed in his spiritual advancement in life. It's a long purport. We'll stop there for today. Om Agana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tazamai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pumunitananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Here you have Sanat Kumar giving instructions to Prithu Maharaj and all his citizens. Let us not forget the situation of Prithu Maharaj, who is the prime recipient of the four Kumaras' mercy. He is so expert in his government administration that his whole territory over which he presides is sinless. Therefore, the four Kumaras decided to come. They descended from the sky, as predicted by Lord Vishnu. And Prithu Maharaj is so humble that he says, how did I deserve this great fortune to see such rarely seen exalted personalities? How did such extraordinary benefit enter my life? This is the humility of a Vaishnava. Prithu Maharaj had just seen the Supreme Personality of God in himself. And Prithu Maharaj himself is a Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord. Yet, when the four Kumaras descend, he says, how did persons like us get to see you? By what inconceivable mercy has this happened? And then he offered very suitable words of praise and glorification to the four Kumaras. That offering of praise and glorification is not just some kind of ritual done out of social pressure, ritual done out of done with no feeling, just because it's socially required, it's done. No, it's not like that. Prithu Maharaj offered words that were very precise, full of meaning, and very sweet. That is part of the process of stimulating the distribution of Krishna Katha. By Prithu Maharaj's attitude, he's stimulating the four Kumaras to deliver the goods, to deliver the Krishna Katha. It is a personal process. And Prithu Maharaj knows how to play his part well. He speaks the realities of the four Kumaras appearing in this world. He explains people can't understand such persons as you, just as they can't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You four Kumaras are constantly manifesting throughout the material world, yet no one sees you. But how is that any big surprise? The Supersoul is in everyone's heart, accompanying every living entity, and no one sees the Supersoul. So therefore, we shouldn't be surprised that no one can see you. In other words, you are the direct representatives of the Supersoul. So the Supersoul is not perceived, although he's always there, and you're not perceived, although you're always going here and there distributing the glories of the Lord. This is the reality of distributing Krishna consciousness. People don't understand what's going on in their midst. They don't understand the life of a devotee who is dedicated to spreading Krishna's glories. although the devotees are apparently in the midst of ordinary people, the ordinary people, they can't see them in the sense they don't understand what they're doing. We should not be surprised, and we should take solace from the words of Prithu Maharaj, that this is the way things are. Nevertheless, just as the four Kumaras are going on with their distribution, similarly, we should go on with our distribution. The people may understand, they may not understand, but the activity goes on nevertheless. So, when the four Kumaras heard the sweet and meaningful and appropriate greeting by Prithu Maharaj. Sanat Kumar smiled, satisfied fully. Now, that smiling and satisfaction is not just some kind of casual thing. Oh, he smiled. Oh, he was satisfied. No. That smile of full satisfaction means that extraordinary knowledge is now going to be delivered. This is the bhakti process for transmission of Divya Gyan. Just like every day we have Prabhupada's Guru Puja and we sing Divya Gyan Hriday Prakashito. You cause the divine knowledge to manifest in our hearts. Srila Prabhupada in Mumbai explained in 1977 how the Guru Puja is not just some ritual. He said, this is actually the transmission of Divya Gyan. Now, how can we understand that with our ordinary senses? It seems like it's a nice ritual. It's nice devotees come together and glorify the founder Acharya. But Srila Prabhupada is explaining things are going much deeper than that. By the devotees coming to sing praises, in that way, Divya Gyan is being imparted to them. Actually, what the song says happens. Divya Gyan Hriday Prakashito. The meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam becomes manifest in the heart. This is true bhakti mysticism, that just by glorifying Krishna's pure devotee, the devotees become free from material desires and they understand Krishna, they understand Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, we should take very, very seriously and consider very significantly Sanat Kumar's smile of full satisfaction. And then he's going to speak. He's going to explain such relevant knowledge for the people in general. Now, Prithu Maharaj, because of his humility, he knows how to ask questions, even though he knows the answer. That may seem strange to you. Why ask questions if you know the answer? But he's doing that to show, this is how you honor exalted persons. Even though you may know the answers, you still ask the questions because the answers get sweeter and sweeter, deeper and deeper. And besides, everyone who hears the answer, they'll benefit. So even though you may know the answer, you still ask the question because that's the proper behavior that you manifest before a superior person. This doesn't make sense according to Western mentality. If you know the answer, why you want to ask questions? What's the big deal? You know. In fact, if you know the answer, you want everyone else to know that you know the answer. You want to show your stuff, so to speak. But why ask a question when you already know the answer? Other than maybe it's false ego, you want to present yourself, show your knowledge. But that is not the case with Prithu Maharaj. And that is not the case with the proper Vaishnav way of interaction. He's asking questions, even though he already knows the answer, as a offering of prayer, offering of glorification, as a sign that I'm dealing with a superior person. I must ask questions. It's a different way of dealing, different way of behaving, far beyond the passionate and ignorant culture of today. So, Sanat Kumar is delivering the Divya Gyan now. And we heard yesterday how he said one should mold his life in such a way that he cannot live in peace without drinking the nectar of the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Such a powerful lifestyle instruction. Make your life so you can't live in peace without hearing about Krishna. Now, if you just take that instruction on your head, your whole the whole management and administration of your life becomes very clear. You know exactly what to do, exactly how to sacrifice, exactly how to arrange your living situation. In other words, a devotee is very expert in terms of lifestyle management, administrating your lifestyle. Your overriding principle above everything is, I can't live in peace unless I hear about Krishna. As stated in today's verse, Smritya, one must always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that remembrance of the Lord can be continued if we hear about Him constantly. You know the nine processes of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. Remembering. How is remembering of Krishna effectively done in this age of Kali when the mind is so weak and the intelligence so bewildered? How can you remember Krishna? That's done if you put yourself in a situation in which you're always hearing about Krishna. A devotee who is advancing is known by his or her ability to seize opportunities to hear about Krishna. Please think of it in that way. You're actually seizing the opportunity. Yes, I'll take that. Here's a chance to hear about Krishna. I'll grab it. That is the beginning manifestation of greed for Krishna, which is such an exalted quality that Rupa Goswami says, if greed for Krishna can be purchased in the marketplace, buy it immediately. Tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. But that kind of greed is not derived from millions of pious activities. So, greed for Krishna is the most exalted thing, but it begins by our eagerness to seize opportunities. And that seizing of opportunities is possible for all devotees. Lolyam, intense greed, as evidenced by the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, as evidenced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All right, that's on another level. But if we, in sadhana bhakti, know how to seize opportunities to glorify Krishna, then we're on the way to the development of greed for Krishna. Another point that's mentioned here is to hear about Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or similar authentic literature is to live in Krishna consciousness. So everyone wants to be alive. Everyone wants to live. That means we surround ourselves with opportunities for hearing about Krishna. Then we can be said to be alive. This living in Krishna consciousness based on hearing about Krishna and remembering Him is so vividly demonstrated by Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is Krishna Himself teaching how to be a fully absorbed devotee. Not sentimentally, but 24-hour-a-day absorption based on the highest conclusions of the Shastras. That is Lord Chaitanya. Now, understanding Lord Chaitanya can't be done by one's material intelligence because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a contradiction. Sanat Kumar's instructions here are so that our spiritual life can properly flourish, so that by the Lord's grace we can understand the spiritual energy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is demonstrating that he is feeling separation from Krishna, although he's Krishna Himself. As Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya accepted the loving mood of the gopis. He accepted Gopi Bhava. The gopis accept Brajendanandana, Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, as their kanta, as their lover. So, Lord Chaitanya is showing, I accept their mood. And whom do they accept? They accept Sri Krishna Shyam Sundar. But Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. And through his pastimes, the nectar of his pastimes, he's showing that although I'm Krishna himself, I'm in the mood of my dearest devotees, and I'm feeling separation from Krishna. I'm feeling that separation from Krishna that can only be experienced in the presence or in connection with Krishna himself. The loving mood of Lord Chaitanya is a mood, a bhava, that can only be in connection to Krishna, not any of Krishna's expansions, not even Lord Narayan. Lord Chaitanya is showing that kind of mood. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami quotes from Rupa Goswami's Lila Madhava, Lalita Madhava, how during the springtime, Krishna is enjoying his Rasa Lila, but he left it all and hid himself in a kunja, in a grove, because he wanted to show special attention to his dearmost devotee, Srimati Radharani. Lord Krishna is waiting in that grove. And instead of Srimati Radharani, what Kaviraj Goswami describes as a phalanx of gopis, like an army of gopis. This is Vrindavan, where instead of armies of soldiers or armies of princes, you have armies of gopis. So they're coming by, and Krishna is affected by their loving mood. This is the nature of spiritual existence. Everything is a two-way street. Krishna is affected by the loving mood, and he wants to hide, but he's kind of immobilized by their bhava, by their love. So he can't quite hide himself in this grove. Therefore, what he does is he changes his form into four-handed Narayan. So the gopis come along and they see, oh, who is this? Because first they thought from a distance, there he is, Shyam Sundar. They approach. As they got closer, wait a minute, this is not Shyam Sundar. This is Narayan. They just stood there and looked. This is not what we are after. So then they offered their humble obeisances. Namo Narayan, we offer our humble obeisances to you. And asked, they made a request, please give us the prasad. Please give us the mercy of Krishna Sangha. Give us the mercy of Krishna's association. In the association of Narayan, Krishna in his four-handed form, their loving ecstasy was crippled. It couldn't manifest fully. So they simply just asked, give us Krishna's association. And then they left. Next came Srimati Radharani. And Krishna decided he would have some fun, because he's a supreme enjoyer. So he decided he would maintain that four-handed Narayan form just to see what would be the reaction of his dearmost devotee. But as much as he tried, as she came closer to where he was hiding, he couldn't maintain his four-handed form. By the intensity of her bhava, of her ecstatic love, he had to change back into Shyam Sundar. So this is the nature of bhakti. Everything is a two-way street. First, we understand the two-way street between Prithu Maharaj and the four Kumaras, when we can begin to perceive their loving exchanges, how they are stimulating each other. Then, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, we can understand the loving exchanges between Krishna and his intimate associates in Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya is inconceivable because he's feeling separation from Krishna. He's showing how to do that, yet he's Krishna himself. So Kaviraj Goswami explains, you can only understand this if you're willing to accept the Lord has achincha shakti. He has inconceivable energies. Otherwise, from the mundane point of view, you can't understand it. Your material intelligence can't enter in to these kind of mysteries. And Rupa Goswami explains in this pastime, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the feelings that Krishna's intimate devotees had for him is the greatest mystery in spiritual life. Now, when we're dealing with the greatest mystery in spiritual life, naturally, we have to be very humble and very cautious. We have to properly prepare our consciousness. How is our consciousness properly prepared for this nectar of Krishna's pastimes? As stated here, we must always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, Srila Prabhupada is giving the practical instructions here how to do that. If we're always hearing about Krishna, then it will be possible to remember Krishna always. And if you're always hearing about Krishna, that means you're living in Krishna consciousness. Such concentration in Krishna consciousness can be achieved by persons who are strictly following the rules and regulative principles. We have recommended in our Krishna conscious movement that a devotee chants 16 rounds on beads daily and follows the regulative principles. That will help the devotee to be fixed in his spiritual advancement in life. This reminds me of one devotee. He was a leader in Los Angeles in the early 70s. Just like in this purport, Prabhupada's mentioning about how in the spiritual sky incense factory, which used to be in Los Angeles, as the devotees were making incense and packing the incense, they were listening to lectures. They were listening to lectures of Srila Prabhupada. So you might take that as a small thing, but Srila Prabhupada took that as an example of how to live always in Krishna. So this is the difference between our vision and the vision of the acharyas. In the verse it says, we must always follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas. So just see how significantly Srila Prabhupada took this. They're making incense, they're doing devotional service, and they're hearing about Krishna. This is an example of how to live in Krishna consciousness. What we may take to be so small, a pure devotee of Krishna takes to be such a big thing. And naturally, he's praying, if they'll only go on like this, if they'll only continue like this through thick and thin, their life will be a success. They will go back home, back to Godhead. So, I was speaking about a leader who was in the early 70s here in Los Angeles. He was one of the first and foremost international ISKCON leaders. And then he had some difficulty, and he went away for a while, and he came back around 1975. And I was filing Srila Prabhupada's letters, both the letters to Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's responses back. So I got to see both sides of the exchange. It's always necessary in spiritual life to see both sides because everything in bhakti is a two-way street. So this devotee, he wrote Srila Prabhupada, now that I have returned to Krishna consciousness, I need to regain your mercy. I need a chance how to capture very dramatically the mercy of the Lord. Because of what I've done, I need to get back into your graces. I need to do something very dangerous. In that way, I'll get the mercy. Please, Srila Prabhupada, give me some dangerous project, some life-threatening service to do. So in that way, I can capture the mercy of the Lord. What do you recommend, Srila Prabhupada? Some dangerous mission. life-threatening. Get the special mercy. And I was just a young devotee in 1975. When I saw Srila Prabhupada's response, I just burst out laughing. I ran into Jayadvaita Maharaj. He was Jayadvaita Brahmacharya. And I ran into him, take a look at this. Look at Prabhupada's response. What was Prabhupada's response to the request for a life-threatening, dangerous, special mission? Yeah, like a spiritual 007 or something. Prabhupada wrote back, you request a dangerous mission, a special mercy mission. I simply request that you attend the morning and evening program. Then everything will be all right. So this shows you this difference in perspective between what we take bhakti to be and what the great acharyas take it to be. We think, what a big deal, attending the morning, the evening program, oh, it's going on all the time, take it or leave it as you like, you know, at least someone's going, what's the big deal? But Prabhupada took it to be so important. This hearing about Krishna, living in Krishna. Therefore, an intelligent devotee adjusts his or her vision to see things the way that Krishna's best devotees see these things. That is the way of following in the footsteps of great acharyas. Now, in the first part of the purport, quite a bit of attention is given to ahimsa, nonviolence. And as you know from Bhagavad Gita, ahimsa doesn't simply refer to the lack of physical violence. It also refers to not impeding anyone's spiritual progress. That is the expanded Vaishnava definition of ahimsa. That's why we can't tolerate people living in a soul-killing civilization in which people's chances for becoming Krishna conscious are very, very severely curtailed because of so much materialistic propaganda, so much material anxiety and stress. I think last year when I was here, I told you how there's a whole spate of books, top-selling books in the USA, about how God is a delusion, how God has failed, how now is the time for the end of all religion. These are still going on this year. A new one has just come out. It's in the top 5 best-selling books in the USA. Religion as poison. So this is the atmosphere. Now you may say, oh, but, you know, not everybody accepts that kind of propaganda. But just by the presence of this this kind of nonsense, the atmosphere becomes polluted. And just by the presence of this lying propaganda, people's chances to become Krishna conscious are consciously or unconsciously affected and reduced. So therefore, we have a much broader definition of ahimsa, nonviolence. But even the basic definition of nonviolence is not understood by people. They're worried about the extinction of this kind of whale or this kind of bird. They give great credit to themselves for protecting this particular species or that particular species. They have no holistic conception of how to be the friend of all living entities. I was thinking particularly about, I have a nephew, the son of my brother, and he violated the family tradition by not doing super well in school and going to, you know, Ivy League school. So, yeah, he was 18, and so my brother, his father, laid down the law. Okay. So, you know, you fooled around. Now, you're going to have to do something to make a man of yourself. You're going to have to do something to consolidate yourself and become for real. So his son, my nephew, decided, well, I guess I got to join the military. Because, you know, I couldn't go to a top school. You know, I fooled around. Now I got to pay the price. I realized that, you know, I wasted so much time. I'm 19. You know, what's my future? So he began to calculate. Now, if you join the army, we all know what happens to you. You join the army or the Marines, you're going to be on the ground in Iraq. He decided it's either the Air Force, the Coast Guard, or the Navy. So he tried for the Coast Guard, you know, just sticking around the USA, you know, cruising off, the coast of New Orleans or something like that. But they didn't take him. Their quota was already full. So then he figured the Navy. I'll join the Navy. I'll get lots of skills. I'll get, opportunity for government money to go to university later. And I'll never see any combat. I'll never get anywhere near violence. I'll be safe on a boat far from land, maybe firing a few cruise missiles into Iraq every once in a while, but I'll never see any problems. No violence. So he joined the Navy, and after he signed up, they told him, guess what? We're going to make you the quartermaster, the supply officer for a team of Navy SEAL commandos in Iraq. This is material nature. He thought he had it all figured out, I'll be on a boat, big ship, in the Persian Gulf, never see land, never see any combat, join the Navy. He had it all figured out. Nope. He's on the land in Iraq. He's not in combat, it's all happening around him. He's in some fortified bunker, and he called my mother on the phone because the telecommunications are so advanced these days. You can call anyone from anywhere. So he's calling my mother, and she's hearing the boom, bombs exploding in the background. And he's like, oh, Grandma, Grandma, get me out of here, get me out of here. Boom, boom. And my mother's getting all excited. Oh, Jesus, oh, precious Jesus, save him, save him. Boom. So then she asked him, my dear grandson, is there anything we can send you? We want to send you a care package. What can we send you? Oh, Grandma, Grandma, if you can just send me beef jerky, I'll be so happy. So they don't see the correlation at all. Yeah. He's stuck in violence, and yet he wants to commit more violence himself that got him into that situation in the first place. So even the basic definition of ahimsa is not understood. How a devotee can be a friend, not only of human beings, but of all living entities. And then, beyond that, the definition of ahimsa expands to never doing anything to impede someone's spiritual progress. From that standpoint, we criticize human society because it indeed does that. It stops people's spiritual advancement and overwhelms them with material options. You can see today, people aren't so philosophic. Young people aren't so philosophic today. Their brain has been so wired that they're just looking for entertainment and opportunity, how to get the necessary means for enjoying their senses. That's the result of living in this particular society, which has caused a culture, brought about a culture, in which no one thinks too deeply. We have to wake them up. That is our service to Krishna, to wake up sleeping persons. They're sleepwalking, they think they're awake, but actually they're deep in slumber. And so the devotee of the Lord, out of compassion, seeks to wake them. As Prabhupada explains in the word for word, acharita agya, simply preaching Krishna's activities. That is the greatest way to show love for Krishna. Someone who you care for, someone whom you're attracted to, you want to talk about. So, as genuine descendants of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, we want to show our attraction to Krishna by spreading Krishna's glories all over the world. That is not a neophyte activity. It's not a less advanced activity. It is the actual symptom of someone who wants to develop the topmost love of Krishna. So that is the nature of our particular sampradaya, how to become dear to Krishna by spreading Krishna's glories everywhere, even amidst a soul-killing civilization. Then we get the mercy of the disciple succession. We can understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feelings of separation from Krishna. By the mercy of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, we can understand the greatest mysteries in spiritual life, the feelings felt by Krishna's most dear devotees. These things become revealed not by material analysis, but by our pleasing Krishna. That pleasing Krishna begins with the constant effort to shape our daily circumstances so that we can't live in peace without hearing about Krishna. And naturally, the more we hear about Krishna, the more we want to distribute Krishna's glories. In this way, our internal spiritual life naturally develops. That is the process given to us by our acharyas. And they're simply praying, will these devotees stick to this? Will these devotees go on in this way year after year after year? If they do so, they'll surely get the result. They'll go back home, back to Godhead at the end of life. We'll stop here and ask any questions. Yes.
From here to Hare Krishna. Maharaj, in your preaching, what is your experience? What's the percentage of people, the people you preach to? Do they become vegetarians from the preaching, or people who are already vegetarians become devotees? Do they understand what you're saying when you preach to them? Does a meat eater actually understand it?
My experience is people, they don't understand anything, but when they taste Krishna Prasad, when they associate with devotees, and when they read Srila Prabhupada's books, something happens. And I've given up trying to figure it out. It just happens. Sometimes it's said that Srila Prabhupada's books are difficult to understand for people. But if you think like that, that means you have an opportunity for more service. Give them your association so that they'll be enthusiastic to read the books. So if you think that people aren't like they were in the 70s, you know, they're not inquiring, they're not, you know, in the 70s, it was quite normal. Someone would buy a Bhagavad Gita, read it in 3 days, and come running into the temple. I just want to live here. Social situation is a bit different, but that doesn't mean that people can't appreciate Prabhupada's books. What it does mean is we have an opportunity to do more service, to give our association to stimulate them. So that's my opinion of what I've seen. If you give people the association of enthusiasm in receiving, reading, assimilating Prabhupada's books, they'll catch the spark very easily, and then they're off. They go. But if you just sit back and say, everyone's a conformist these days, young people are conservative, they're just worried about making money, and how are they going to ever, you know, take the time or have the headspace to get into Prabhupada's books? Then you've defeated yourself. But if you take it as an opportunity for service, all right, they're the way they are these days, and we are the way we are, so we're going to give them association to inspire them to read Prabhupada's books. From what I've seen, the spark just ignites and they take off. But we have to get over this mental barrier that we've given ourselves. So in spite of their dullness, if they take prasad, chant Hare Krishna, and get to receive Prabhupada's books and study them in the association of devotees, then all that dense darkness fades away. It does happen, but we have an opportunity to do so much service now, so it depends on us. Yes, Savasaru.
You know, mentioned this a while ago, but I just recently read where, you know, Harvard, which is considered to be the atheistic capital, in America, just recently the chaplain there for some, I don't know, some particular faith, I can't recall now, said that there's an upswing, that prior, you know, in previous years, Harvard was known as the, you know, real scientific approach to understanding life, and that the religion was really not a priority. Whereas these days, they're finding that more and more young people are interested in development of some type of spiritual understanding. And they've seen a great upswing in the attendance and inquisitiveness of young people coming to understand some type of spiritual faith. So there must be something going on in society.
Yes, it has been reported that there is some kind of increased religious interest on campuses where normally one wouldn't expect to see that. Someone can counter, as I think Badri Narayan Prabhu queried, well, how much of this is concerning, you know, fundamentalist Christianity? And a lot of it is concerned with that. But still, we should take it that something is possible, that on campuses there is some rise in inquisitiveness. And yes, we should take advantage, certainly. As Srila Prabhupada said, that devotees are the greatest opportunists. So wherever we see an opportunity, yes, we want to jump right in on it. In this way, we're doing our service for distributing Krishna's glories. So material life means things fluctuate constantly. Things go into style, go out of style. But our work has to go on. Just like a businessman makes a profit whether the price goes up or down, similarly, a devotee in all circumstances distributes Krishna's glories. So yes, we took note. We take note of that. Oh, seems to be an increase, perhaps, of spiritual interest on campus. Okay, let's get into it. Let's check it out. It might be big. Maybe it's just the fundamentalist Christians who are experiencing an increase. Maybe not. Let's check it out. That's the attitude of devotees. Opportunists. We're always looking. We'll try this. We'll try that. Anything. But our business goes on how to distribute Krishna's glories. Yes.
Maharaj, when we talk to our family and friends back home or in the U.S. regarding the Krishna consciousness, they accept that individual level. They understand that, they appreciate Krishna consciousness, and they accept it at individual level. But when they interact with the rest of the family or the society outside, they feel isolated, that if they follow this whole Krishna consciousness path, they will be isolated in the whole mist of family and friends. So how we can help them to constantly go along with this path?
We have to give them loving association so that even though their mundane family and friends may consider them to be strange, but amongst devotees, they feel so much love and care that that makes everything else fade into the background. So that is the job of the devotee sangha, how to make the devotees who live in the ashram and the congregational members feel so loved and cared for that it doesn't matter how they're treated by those who don't understand Krishna consciousness. That's more service for us to do. I think we'll end here. Thank you very much. All glories to the Prabhupada.